All right, and we're back. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Erin Backus, and this is the Aha Moment. And we also have my co-host, Irene Barber.
Hello, hello, everybody. Irene from Maine.
And
thanks
and I'm coming to you from Milford, Connecticut. And this is episode 4, Irene?
Technically, yes.
Technically. the first two, we interviewed, I guess, each other about our aha moments. We had Kathy Perry last week from New Hampshire, and she works at the Monarch School of New England, and she's an occupational therapist as well as a horticultural therapist. And today we have with us Holly Maron, and she is an occupational therapist as well. And Holly comes to us from Massachusetts, originally from Rhode Island, but I'll let her talk a little bit more about her background and her aha moment. And
and if I can add in, we also wanted to make sure that we include practitioners of complementary therapies to what horticultural therapy is. And we felt like, you know, having Holly as part of this interview, you can expand upon how these various therapies can be a mutually beneficial experience for your patients or your clients.
Definitely. Say hi, Holly.
Hi, this is Holly. Thanks for having me, Irene and Erin.
Oh, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, so I heard about occupational therapy when I was in high school. It was, believe it or not, my mother's idea, which was a really brilliant idea. She learned about it taking my older sister to physical therapy schools, and she said there was this other field called occupational therapy that was health and science and rehab-oriented, but also very mental health-oriented, and that really appealed to me. Also, I was volunteering in my school special ed classroom, and I just really loved it. I really loved the students, and I got to meet OTs working there. So I decided really young to be an OT. That was what was expected in my family. Go to school to be somebody, to get a license, to have a job. And so I picked OT.
And do you feel like as being an OT, it was fulfilling enough as an OT in your you know, concept of what it means to enjoy your job, feel fulfilled in your job? Or was there something that you are yearning still as an OT?
That's a great question. I have always struggled with staying with the profession as it is because I've always been interested in these other avenues like nature-based and outdoor-based therapeutic work and yoga and nutrition and now plants and gardening. And so I have had all these interests that I, I'm always bringing into my work as an OT. And because I decided so young to be an OT, it sort of was like before I really understood who I was and what I wanted to do in the world, I was preparing for this field. So it's very interesting as I look back, because I've been an OT over 20 years, that, things that I was doing even in high school were these seeds that were planted in me to come back around to other interests that I had, even at that age, including gardening and landscape and nature and environmental activism. So it catches up with you if you don't pursue it when you are called to it. It will keep calling.
Exactly.
And I just keep answering, and I've just become more at peace with the fact that I have great training as an OT. I have good job stability. It's really a gift to be able to do the work that I do and to just make it be what I want it to be.
And was there ever a significant or momentous occasion in your career as being an OT to realize that horticultural therapy would be effective for some of your patients? Was there something that said, you know, I need to start incorporating this with some of my patients or my clients.
Yeah, definitely. I was working in an adult day rehab program. One of the clients really enjoyed just leaving the program for a walk through the neighborhood. And our destination would be this backyard sort of garden nursery, you know, somebody's mm-hmm. side job of propagating plants in their yard and kind of mm-hmm. selling them at the end of the driveway. And we would have a scheduled walk once a week, and we would take some petty cash, and we would go pick out a plant and bring it back to the program and either plant it, or she would bring it to the family that she lived with in adult foster care.
Mm-hmm.
And that just grew in the program. We started cultivating houseplants and propagating plants in the windows, and my director started building shelves to put in all of the windows so that we could have lots of little houseplants.
I love that.
And
love
we started
that.
A little job, a little vocational opportunity. We called it Green Thumbs, and we would go around to the nonprofit that we were part of. We would take care of the office plants in other locations around the town for a small fee. And so we would visit with our little watering cans and do interaction with people and write little invoices and collect money. And it just gave meaning and purpose. And
that's
so
great.
That was my first situation where it naturally was incorporated as a therapeutic outlet.
Where was that, Holly?
It was in Greenfield, Massachusetts. It was a program called Our Place. It was part of Clinical and Support Options, and it doesn't exist anymore. But,
I was going to say, like, do you still push in there and things like that? That sounds such a wonderful place.
Yeah, it was really a special place, very special place. Mm. Yeah, the town itself was really sweet, too, that they started a program called Adopt a Barrel, and there were these planters on the sidewalk, like those old, you know, kind, you know, like classic looking. And so different businesses would adopt a barrel and you'd plant it and go water it once a week. And so that was another thing that we did as part of Green Thumbs. So it connected us to the community and a walk around town, and we would get a coffee after. So it was really, really nice.
Are you familiar with how some of the individuals that you worked with, or you practice these experiences with, do you know where they're at these days? Do they use horticulture in their lives, or do they do anything that was part of the skill building that you incorporated with them, or you provided?
I've moved jobs every 3 to 5 years, so I don't know any longer. But fortunately, in one of my more recent jobs where I've been for 5 years, in a residential therapeutic school school in a residential program for youth with mental health needs, we've been doing gardening on the grounds for the last several years, and I can see kids who get really into that and want to go to the farmer's market and buy radishes and bring them home and print out an idea of how to help, you know, in the kitchen with their mom to prepare it. Or these turnips, those white Haruki turnips. They come out like around now. And so I look forward to continuing to be with her as she you know, becomes, she's really just a natural. She loves to forage along the property and in the gardens, daylilies, any herbs. We've made a lot of omelets. So
eat daylilies. I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can eat daylilies.
The whole part?
And similar to that of like a squash flower, you eat the daylily flower or the young shoots, just like hostas, if you want to eat little hosta shoots. Yeah.
No wonder deer like them.
Yeah,
they have a nice, like, crunch, but very interesting texture.
And actually a little bit like a snow pea flavor to it, I think, versus, you know, the foliage at least. So, and as far as your progress in where you're, you know, using horticultural therapy, not necessarily as a registered horticultural therapist, but in the sense that you want to continue to incorporate it, how do you feel that you want to progress with horticultural therapy? Are you interested in, you know, pursuing it as a registration, as you know, becoming professionally registered, or where do you think you're going with your practice of it?
Pretty mildly in some ways.
Yeah, I haven't strongly considered pursuing it as another registration because I'm fortunate to have a license as an OT. So I feel like as an OT, I can incorporate horticulture as a therapeutic medium. I'm not saying I'm a horticultural therapist. I'm, you know, staying within my role as an OT and looking at how horticulture is a meaningful occupation for people if they're into gardening and plant care.
Right.
And places that are plant-based, nature-based, or garden-centered, making sure that those places can be accessed by people with disabilities or injuries. So that's how I got the grant from NECDS. Mm-hmm. I joined the community garden locally and saw a need because I was recovering from a repetitive strain injury, which limited my use of my hands. And I really wanted to get back into gardening and wanted to be connected to a community, not just in my private yard here, and saw the need for some modifications and accommodations around access in the garden to be able to garden successfully. And that got me really, really interested.
And you're doing some great videos, too. Where can someone find your videos? I know they can find it as a member of NEHTN. I've posted it on the website. But don't you have a Instagram now, and you got into that with your videos?
I'm trying to have an Instagram. It's like I'm really not a social media person, pretty introverted. And so it's a real experiment. But I felt like I had to, you know, deliver that I'm doing something with the grant project. So I started taking videos. And so, yes, I am on Instagram. It's Holly_OT.
No, I think they're great. I love your videos. They're so informative.
I think I made them all in, you know, that one morning. Now I need to do some more. I need to, like, work up the courage. But, yeah, I was really inspired by a book that I got at my library last winter when I had a relapse of that injury, a flare-up. So I was, you know, I couldn't work for a couple months, and I was doing a lot of reading. And I found this book called The Lifelong Gardener. And it was written by a woman, a gardener who experienced some difficulties with aging and found a lot of solutions and met a lot of gardeners who were adapting gardening. So I needed a lot of those solutions myself, like better grips, more ergonomic ways to use my hands, and gardening with my feet instead of overuse with my hands. So that was really inspiring.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's almost like when you teach a class, a topic, and you have to get yourself very proficient in it, but yet you have to do some studying, you have to do some research on your own, and then you realize, oh, wow, this really applies to my own desire of knowing what I can do to improve on my, you know, well-being, or in this case. And so you become your own student in so many ways. So it's fulfilling in that way that, you know, we're just all of us as practitioners, I think, we're always developing in our field, and we're always growing to know and excited to know what more there is to improve upon our own practices, but also for our own well-being as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I'm very motivated by what works for me personally in terms of work-life balance and meaningful occupation. And when I really love a certain modality or outlet in my own life, like gardening, or for a time it was yoga, and so I became a yoga teacher, and I got really inspired by Lane Redmond, who was my teacher and good friend, who passed a few years ago, but she's a author of the book When the Drummers Were Women, and a master frame drummer. And so I studied frame drumming with her for many years.
When
brought that into my work.
What was it called?
Everybody should be drumming.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
What was that book called?
Oh, it's called When the Drummers Were Women.
That's awesome.
And she wrote this book in 96, and she researched the role of the frame drum in ancient cultures all over the world and the connection women had to these drums, which were to play them and lead ceremony and sacred practices and honorings. And so that was probably one of the biggest aha moments, was seeing her in a magazine. It was like 1995. I saw her in a little magazine for this holistic health center in Cambridge called Interface or something like that.
Wow.
And she just had her head thrown back and she's playing this giant tambourine, and I thought, what is that? That looks so familiar. I know that somehow. And I have never played the tambourine. And I went to the class, and deep in my, you know, psyche, I knew that, oh, this is a calling. So
right.
I pursued it, and I would bring my drums to work on the psych unit or in special ed classrooms, and work with rhythm and voice and movement, because I was living it. I was really experiencing it. And now I feel like that about plants and gardening.
That's great that you have so many like aha moments that have like altered your life and your career.
Yeah. And as it sounds like, you're very considerate of all of these sensory experiences to be part, you know, of your practice and improving people's well-being. And it's, you know, it's like drums. Is it wind? Is it have anything to do with leaves, or is it birds, or is it the feeling of the soil? I mean, like, it's not just one. It's not just two. It's an all-inclusive practice that it sounds like you really incorporate, and that's holistic all the way.
yeah, I absolutely. And even when I was 17, 18, deciding to be an OT, I was fascinated by mind-body health and the role of nutrition in healing. My father recovered from malignant melanoma in large part because he became macrobiotic and took up a lot of practices around that health avenue. So, things that I value around those different health aspects are are key, absolutely foundation in my life. And so, you know, I gotta believe in it to promote it.
Yeah, definitely. Do you ever have to go back and do you ever go back and think about your time doing the drumming, or do you ever bring it back into your practice?
Oh, yeah. It's still nonlinear. Like, things come and go, depending, especially if I have a client who is really drawn to rhythm or music and really needs that kind of structure and grounding or creative expression. Let's get out the drums. I have different collection based on the kind of energy needed, whether it's more mellow and uplifted or more strong and grounded. So I feel like that with plants in the garden too. You know, the different activities that kids are drawn to in the garden, whether it's the heavy work like the digging. And moving the rocks and pushing the wheelbarrow and hauling the wood chips and pulling out the weeds, that very strong muscle interaction and engagement is so regulating. Very much a part of my work is to support kids in self-regulation. And then you have the kids who, their bodies are like noodles. They don't have a lot of muscle tone, and they're kind of, you know, hot, and they're on meds, and they're uncomfortable. They're in their skin, literally, because of sensory issues and trauma. And they want to garden by walking around the garden and looking, but not touching, maybe, the plant, or smelling preferred scents. So it's such a place for all to heal, I believe.
Right. it's accommodating and adaptive for people of all, you know, abilities and sensitivities and, you know, sense of being, you know what I mean? That horticulture can lend itself in all those capacities.
Yeah, and it's a human instinct to want to be near plants. And I've been so impressed in the last couple summers by how kids are drawn to flowers, and kids who would typically not identify as giving a care about flowers, but because they're attracting butterflies, or we found little interesting frogs on the milkweed last year, or snakes in the garden. Oh my God, that is so cool.
I love finding frogs.
Yeah, little frogs. The worms, the whole insect. Or when we spread the straw, you know, to mulch around the vegetables and stuff, and then watch, like, the robins and the sparrows come and steal the straw and bring it back to their nest. Like, it's so great. It's like drama in the garden.
Yeah. How much life. There's so much entertainment in nature. Yeah. We just have to take time to be observant of it. And then, wow, do we see so much more. You know, once it's like meeting a stranger for the first time, and then you realize you pass them every day. You know, when you start to observe these natural phenomenons, then you're like, oh my gosh, I did not realize this is always occurring, you know, or on a patterned basis, etc.
Go.
So I wanted to tell you about this time in high school where I was really challenged by this advanced chemistry class, and all my teachers and everybody was saying, oh, you need to take it to get into BU. It's a competitive school. And I was having a lot of stress, and I hated it. And I finally just decided, I'm not doing it. It's not worth it to me. So I dropped the class my senior year, and I took greenhouse management and floral design.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. And then I got to take, like, landscape design the next semester, and I got to take creative cooking. But my favorite was greenhouse management and floral design. And the things that, to this day, like, affect me seasonally are making the arrangements at Christmas time with evergreen arrangements. Mm-hmm. And so we made them as a class and sold them to teachers, the centerpieces for the holidays. And so that became like a role in my family. I would cut greens around our property and decorate the house for my mom. Mm-hmm. And of course I love to do that still today. And the other thing was, it was a whole culture thing, because I was used to being in these kind of, you know, honors classes and stuff, and I was in with these really hands-on kids, like the vocational students that were rotating back in, and so it was just a whole another great learning experience for me socially to, like, connect with other kinds of learners, and we got to order the seeds, and we got to look through the seed catalog and order flower seeds, and I fell in love with the foxglove plant, and my planted them at my mom's house, you know, when I was a kid, and she just moved, and she misses her foxgloves. Aww. And they were like 20 years of generations from that one class I took.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really
cool. Yeah, we propagated fuchsia, and we got to pick a house plant, which I took to college with me, and you know, the fuchsia got propagated, and we got to bring them home, and it started attracting the hummingbirds, of course. So that was my senior year in high school, and I knew that there was something that was really meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. But nobody said to me that plants and gardening is, or flowers or greenery, that is valued enough for you to pursue it as a profession. I didn't understand that. I thought I had to, you know, get a license, which I did. But it comes back.
It's amazing that you had those classes at a high school level.
Yeah.
Not many schools have landscape or horticulture or greenhouse management classes, so that's pretty special in and of itself, though, that you had that outlet already. So.
Yeah, I feel very grateful. I've had a lot of wonderful influences and exposures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We just have to take time to be observant of it. And then, wow, do we see so much more. You know, once it's like meeting a stranger for the first time and then you realize you pass them every day. You know, you when you start to observe these natural phenomenons, then you're like, oh my gosh, I did not realize this is always occurring, you know, or on at least a patterned basis, etc. So,
yeah.
Well, so... you, Holly, your story is incredibly inspiring and you, I think you're going to, you're going to bring a lot of light to our listeners.
Thank you.
I just, we're so fortunate that you could participate with us on this.
Yes, thank you so much, Holly.
Oh, it's been fun.
A little story about your aha moment.
Well, I look forward to hearing more from you both and getting to know you, and good luck with your podcast. It's a great concept.
Thank you.
I'm lucky that I was invited, so thanks.
And we look forward to seeing what you have to share with us down the road in your lovely Instagram posts.
Okay.
Yes, keep posting those videos. I love them.
Okay, I will. Thank you for the encouragement. I'm very shy.